The Brad Sessmann Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Casey Jacobson, as we continue looking towards the Final Four of March Madness. Casey will be with us today. FS1 Pac-12 Network College Basketball Analyst. Putting anybody on to analyze the Pac-12, since they didn't do anything in postseason, means we'll have other stuff to talk to with Casey. He also can, of course, weigh in on where the Suns are, and which is nowhere. Eric, you went to the game last night. Is that that's what spies or social media tells me?
I did.
Can I ask why?
I went with a friend who is a Celtics fan.
All right.
And since it was a Celtics home game.
Was it like that last night?
It was
green everywhere.
There was green everywhere.
Oh boy.
We spent most of the night reminiscing about 2008, 2007, 2006, 7 seconds or less.
Right.
When you walked into a Suns game half an hour before tip off and there was like this huge buzz, and you couldn't leave your seat because you didn't want to miss a great Steve Nash pass, an Amari alley-oop, and it's come to Shaq Harrison and a bunch of Alan Williams and a bunch of guys. And
I looked at the box score this morning.
Their 12 straight loss.
I looked at the box score this morning, right? I'm in the business of sports. We do this thing. I can't give you the last four or five guys on the bench now. Unless you're on their payroll. I don't know of anybody. I was with some business people yesterday afternoon at 5 o'clock that were going to the game last night. One of these people is well-known in the community for how he goes about his advertisements and is well-known. Another person is well-known just from a philanthropic standpoint. And they both said, we're not even going to make it to halftime. So they were going to the game. And it was just, man, it's so rough.
The Suns are still the only team in the NBA with less than 10 home wins. They are now just a mere 41.5 games behind the Rockets for first place in the Western Conference. 41 and a half games. They've lost 12 straight. They've lost 22 of 23 or 23 of 24. And it's just... bad.
How many people were there last night, really?
Oh, three quarters of the arena was full.
All right. And it's a good opponent.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a Monday night. It's a good opponent. It's spring break still for some people.
Like the Celtics, Brad, were coming off a back-to-back. They played in Sacramento the day before. There was no Kyrie Irving, and they still won the game handily, essentially playing most of their reserves.
What was it? It was 31-15 at the end of one.
It was 36-18 when I got back to my seat after we went and got some food.
I'm going to talk further about this with you. I went and saw Ready Player One last night, which comes out on Friday. Have you seen the previews of that one?
I have not.
It's a Spielberg movie.
Oh, I have seen it.
And I saw it.
It's like a gaming movie, right?
Yes. And I took Cole. I took my 13-year-old. And it's in 3D, so you have to have the glasses on. And it was packed. And there was a lot of buzz, a lot of energy. It was long, 2 hours and 20 minutes. But, man, if you're under the age, like my 13-year-old and his buds were on group chat all the way home last night. Well, I know all the details.
You used to invite me to those screenings. Remember that?
You would not go to this one.
Well, when it's 96 miles from my house, no.
What would you – I mean, give me a movie you want to go to.
I wouldn't want to go see that. You're right.
You would not want to see that.
Not a gaming guy.
The soundtrack's really cool. It's got an 80s theme to it, an 80s soundtrack. So there was some very funny references towards games. Like, my kids have played Minecraft. My kids have played all these games through the years I've seen over and over and over. And it's been great for them. So last night, he was right in his element. It was fun. It really was fun. I'm interested to hear what Bill has to say on Thursday about it, because I think Bill was there last night. So I did not see any of the Suns game live. But because I do this, I have to watch. So, yeah, there's the DVR. And, yeah, I can zip right through it. And as I said... boy, there's just not much there. By the way, opening comments, as always, brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. You need life insurance. Yes, you do. When was the last time you checked into it? Have you ever checked into it? You can go online, get a free quote, right? No waiting, no hassle, any of that stuff. Go online, sagicornow.com, and see what you can do with life insurance. Get yourself going and protect what matters most. We appreciate Sagicor Now. Casey Jacobson comes up at 10:20. So while our hometown heroes on the basketball court just continue to plunder along, the Coyotes are 17-12-6 since January. And Clayton Keller's actually started to catch my eye. Haley has been all over me about we need to do something on Clayton Keller. So go do it. And they've been on the road. They've been in Florida. But he set the all-time rookie scoring record last night with his 23rd goal. They have this very good record in the second half of the season. It feels as though to me, and I could be dead flat wrong on this, and it will not be the last time I'm dead flat wrong on things, okay? It feels as though we're so close that the Suns have sucked so hard at being so bad, and the Coyotes finally have seemed to move through this whole phase of we're going to roll a team and Shane Doan out on the ice. It's a key distinction here. We're going to roll a team and Mike Smith out on the ice, meaning we know we're going to get our heads kicked in, but gosh, we got to draw fans, and so we're going to keep Shane and Mike out there. And this is not disrespecting Shane Doan in particular, but there was just this feel for years of we're not going to do anything different because we got to draw fans. Well, they finally imploded, and the same goes for Dave Tippett. Dave Tippett needed a change of scenery. You can only get beat down so many times. If you don't like what you're doing professionally, if you're sitting there right now in your cubicle and you're watching this like, Brad, this sucks, get out. Get out. I'm going to give you life advice here, whether you want it or not. Don't get into a rut of doing something you don't like because life is too dang short or you're just not going to grow. And in professional sports, they'll take the short-sighted approach of, well, we got to keep this guy because we got to keep the lower bowl full. That happened with Steve Nash and the Suns. They didn't move along. This wasn't disrespecting Steve, but it was very clear that he was just not the same player. And when you do that in professional sports, when you're afraid, like Larry Fitzgerald is still at the top of his game. Doesn't matter to me how old he is, but there's going to be a day where Larry's just got to say, I've had enough. And I don't know when that is. The same thing goes for Drew Brees or Tom Brady in football. And the Coyotes just didn't want to make the change. But it certainly feels like Tampa Bay is really good. And you can use the whole they overlooked an opponent and all that stuff during the course of a long season. That does happen. I've seen enough sports to know there's nights where guys are like, we got them tomorrow night, come on. And then what the heck happened? Who cares? We have another game coming up. But I'll give it to you in these terms. Have you watched the NHL this season with what's gone on in Las Vegas? So the Golden Knights have been this expansion franchise. It comes into Vegas, shiny new arena. They're selling every game out. They're getting gobs of money. When Eric and I were up there, our drivers were telling us about the lines to get tickets and how they've jacked up prices and all that stuff. And so there's a tremendous buzz around the Golden Knights. Many of you weren't here in Phoenix back in the day when they had the Roenicks and they had the Tkachuks and they had Shane at the top of his game and they had a team that was in the postseason. There really is no better drama. And this isn't disrespecting the Diamondbacks. You may be a baseball fan, but guys, I'm telling you this. It doesn't matter if it's Suns, Spurs, and a hip check by Robert Horry. When you have a hockey team that is in postseason, and they have postseason games. I went through this with Gretzky and the Kings in my broadcast career. We had the Kings contract. When Gretzky was there, and I was part of that deal, doing shows, the community, this Southern California laid back. Here in Phoenix, the last time the Coyotes went to the postseason, there's just a different feel. It's a different vibe. And it just feels as though they're so close that when you go 17-12-6, that may not sound like great numbers to you, but when you understand how bad the product was and you look ahead and say, you know, if they have a good offseason and they make some of the right moves, they may actually be able to get this thing turned around. And the ownership has changed over and over and over. Big distinction between the Coyotes and what's going on with the Suns. The nonsense with the Suns, the owner is directly culpable on this whole deal. The Coyotes, Steve Patterson is there now, and how many owners has that organization gone through? It's been the consistent voice of Robert with the Suns. That's why they've been a mess. And they may get the number one overall pick, or they may screw it up and win a game or two down the stretch. I'm so optimistic on the Coyotes, and I feel like, you know, if the Suns could just pull their heads out a little bit, they'd be sitting there as an eighth seed next year, and the Coyotes about the same, and we actually have relevancy from November through March rather than just waiting for Thursday and opening day. No offense for that. I'm excited for the Diamondbacks, but it feels like they're so close. There's some news with Gonzaga in the Mountain West this morning I want to get into, because there was some movement last night in college basketball that I want to get to. And Ndamukong Suh going to the Rams. The Rams are, Bill Plaschke had this great headline, Legion of Goon is what they're calling the Rams now. So I want to get into that as the show moves along as well. Casey Jacobson around the corner. Tyler Shuck is going to be with us today. The former Hamilton High quarterback, now at the University of Oregon. He left high school early, enrolled at the semester break up at Oregon. He's already part of spring ball. We will talk with Tyler Shuck on all of that and how it's working out for him. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now let's turn our attention onto the basketball court. FS1, Pac-12 Network college basketball analyst Casey Jacobson, of course, former first-round pick of the Suns. He can talk about what is going on over on that front as we come down the stretch. How are you, Casey?
Great, Brad. Good to be with you. March Madness in full swing, actually at the tail end. It's been wild, but fun.
It's Nova's to lose, right?
It is.
Yeah. I mean, we're at that point. We're just at that point where let's just call it as we see it.
For sure. There's been, as crazy as this college basketball season, there's been a small handful of teams that have been consistent. Now, the most consistent team was Virginia, and we know how it ended up for them. They were the first number one seed to ever lose to a 16 seed. But the other team that comes to mind as most consistent was Villanova. Villanova, they did lose a couple of games. They actually didn't even win the Big East regular season. But the reason is one of their starters, Phil Booth, broke a bone in his hand, and he was out for a good month. And they lost two games in a row during that stretch. Now that they got healthy, they won the Big East tournament. And if you just look at their overall body of work, they've been fantastic. Jalen Brunson is their point guard. Yep. And Brad, I know you watch. He is one of the most unique stories and actual players, just because, like, his story, he's the son of Rick Brunson, right? Played in the NBA for, I believe, 9 or 10 years in the NBA. Was a McDonald's All-American out of high school, but goes to Villanova knowing that he would likely have to wait his turn, and he did. He came off the bench his freshman year when they won the national title. Ryan Arcidiacono was the Big East Player of the Year that year, was the leading point guard for that team. And Jalen, you know, knew that he would have to wait his turn, which is very unusual for a player of his caliber. And then the other thing that makes him unique when you watch him, Brad, he's the best post-up point guard that I've seen in my 5 years as a broadcaster. He is so unique in the fact that Villanova, he's their best post player in general. Their big guy, Amari Spellman, is a redshirt freshman, is more of a jump shooter and a rebounder than he is a post player. When they need close to the basket buckets, they go to Jalen Brunson. He's just so fun to watch.
The other three, Casey, when you look at these other three teams, we had Cameron Satterwhite on yesterday, a former Gilbert Christian star here in the Valley. He's part of Loyola, of course. And we talked about Michigan. We had Kevin Harlan on, and we look at Kansas. I'm curious from Casey Jacobson's standpoint, because Kansas and Nova play each other, and I'm assuming Nova's going to advance, which would give would Michigan give Nova a better game? Nobody's going to say Loyola's going to give them a better game, would they? I mean, in the championship game, we're looking ahead here.
No, I don't think anybody would say that Loyola would give them a better game, but it still would be really entertaining.
Yeah, that's true.
I think either way, it's going to be really interesting, regardless of who wins the Michigan-Loyola game. I'm picking Michigan. They were the only team, Brad, in my official bracket that I picked correctly to make the Final Four. So my bracket was certainly busted quite a bit this year. But Michigan is a team. You know what's? I don't know if you've already talked about this, but both of these teams are red hot. The two hottest teams in the country right now. They've combined to win 27 games in a row. Michigan and Loyola Chicago. Michigan is the better overall basketball team. They have better NBA prospect. Mo Wagner is their pick and pop four-man, born in Berlin, Germany, and is a fantastic player. But they have other weapons as well. And they're also, you know, a couple years ago, so Michigan played in the national championship game against Louisville. I believe that was in 2015, the year Louisville won, and they've since vacated that championship because of the allegations and all the stuff that's been going on with Rick Pitino and that program. But that team was very much an offensive-oriented team, and they got hot during the tournament, which can happen, right? But this Michigan version is much more defensive-oriented. They have been in the top 15 as far as defensive efficiency from tip to now during the season. They've been really impressive with their ability to keep the ball in front. They mix up their defensive coverages. They're not a huge team, but they have good size, and that's why I do think they're more physical on the perimeter, which is difficult against Loyola Chicago. Why has Loyola been so successful? One, they're shooting the ball extremely well, over 40% from three. But they have five guys that can really spread you out, and so you have to close them out all the way to about 23 feet, which puts a lot of pressure on your man-to-man defense. Michigan is one of the better teams at keeping the ball in front. That is going to be key. I mean, it's key in every game. I think I'm stating the obvious, but Michigan is better than most at keeping the ball in front and not having to help. If they do that, I think they win.
Casey Jacobson is with us. And if we were to get away from the Final Four and look now at particular players, it's the debate that Suns fans just cannot get enough of: DeAndre Ayton or Marvin Bagley. And this is assuming they get the number one overall pick and they're well on their way to having enough ping pong balls. They got blown out again last night. You see it night in and night out, I'm sure. You're the general manager. I'm going to give you the GM hat here. You're Ryan McDonough. Is it DeAndre Ayton or Marvin Bagley if it's the Suns with the number one overall pick from your view?
Sure. It's a pretty good problem to have.
They've worked hard at it, by the way. They've worked hard to get to this point, so don't screw it up.
I get you. They've only won 19 games, so they are working hard. They're going to earn it. I'm going to go with DeAndre Ayton. And I've heard some people say that it's really not close. Mm. I would say it's a little bit closer than that. But here's what I always say, and I say this when I do studio and when I call games, Brett. I know we live in an era of basketball where we love three-point shooters. Even we want our big guys to be able to play on the perimeter. And I certainly do. The more skills you have as a basketball player, regardless of position, the better off you are. But we love three-point shooting. We think, everything's so guard-oriented. I still contend the most difficult thing to guard in basketball is a dominant low post back to the basket big. And why is that? Because it's the most efficient shot when they can shoot 2 or 3 feet away from the basket or dunk. But two, it changes what you do defensively. Now, when I came into the NBA in 2002 with the Phoenix Suns, Shaquille O'Neal was still in his prime with the LA Lakers. Him and Kobe were in the midst of winning back-to-back-to-back championships. And I just remember of all the teams that we scouted, Shaq was so difficult to scout for. And Tim Duncan was so difficult to scout for because we had to double team. When you have a player that is so dominant, so skilled down there that you have to double team, it changes everything you do, and you know that you're going to have to be running around, scrambling defensively, trying to contain other NBA players. And I think DeAndre Ayton has the potential to be a guy like that. Carl Anthony Towns is kind of like that, where you play their team and you're like, crap, we're playing Carl Anthony Towns tonight, and he will go off for 35 against us if we don't do X, Y, and Z. And I don't think Marvin Bagley has as much potential to be that kind of player. I think he could be a really, really nice scorer. I think he's going to grab a ton of rebounds. but he's not as good defensively or potentially as good defensively as DeAndre Ayton. And I just don't think he will have the overall impact that a guy like DeAndre Ayton would have. He reminds me a little bit of Hakeem Olajuwon, and I know that's getting way ahead
of ourselves. That's big.
I know. And I know how people hate, like, let's just let the kid develop. But when I watch him, I can't deny that he reminds me of Hakeem Olajuwon.
You see, put him alongside of Devin Booker and Josh Jackson and T.J. Warren, potentially, you would think those three or four pieces would get you well on your way to being a team that would have a long, successful run if you add the right veteran players. Wouldn't you think that? I mean, they'd finally get out of this ditch if they get Ayton in the number one overall pick?
Well, let's also remember that it's going to take Ayton some years to develop. I can't remember. LeBron's basically the only young player, like 18, 19, 20-year-old, that came into the NBA and immediately made his team playoff viable. And, in fact, LeBron didn't make the playoffs his rookie year or his second year, if I'm not mistaken. So for even LeBron, it took him a couple years. I was rookies with Amari Stoudemire. I came straight from high school to the NBA. Amari was the 2003 Rookie of the Year, and he helped us make the playoffs that year. We were an 8 seed. Yes, I do think that Ayton will have you on the right track, but it's not going to happen immediately. I also think that the Suns could really use a point guard that is on the level of, it doesn't have to be a scoring point guard, but just has to be an unquestioned leader and a guy that can set the table for everybody else. They haven't had that. They've had some sort of combination of combo guards, scorers, or undersized point guards. They haven't had the guy that you know is captaining the ship. They haven't had that. So center, certainly, everybody would love a player like DeAndre that can get you buckets. And he can score in a variety of ways. And then you got to shore up that point guard position as well.
Yeah, I know you follow the high school end of things, too, out in your neck of the woods. LiAngelo Ball entered the draft today. You have any idea where, I'm not saying what team, but where in the draft he would go if he is drafted at all? Do you think, Brad, he's a sure lottery pick? I don't know. I can only go off what I saw in high school and the projections and the trajectory. What do you think? He turned pro this morning. It's in the news cycle.
This is the easiest question you've asked me in all the interviews we've conducted. Brad, LiAngelo Ball will not get drafted at all. And I will even go as far as to say that if you expanded the NBA draft to three full rounds, he would not get drafted. And I don't want to insult him. This isn't anything personal. You asked me a basketball question to evaluate what he could bring to an NBA team. And he could not help any roster. So LiAngelo Ball is a very good shooter. He can shoot threes, and he's got deep range. But he has developed so many bad habits. And I have personally broadcasted, because I do some work with the California High School State Championships at the end of every season. I've personally called, let's say, I think 6 or 7 of LiAngelo and Lonzo and LaMelo's basketball games at Chino Hills High School, including their state championship game 2 seasons ago when Lonzo was a senior. And he has developed so many bad habits defensively. He couldn't guard you one-on-one, Brad.
Get out of here. I need double knee replacement. What are you talking about? You can't guard
I'm
me at all?
You'd cross him over big time, Brad.
Wow.
So they played a crazy style of defense in high school where LiAngelo and LaMelo would stand at half court, and what they basically did was funnel the dribble. They would let you go by them, but they would funnel the dribble towards the middle of the floor where either Lonzo or one of the better players in California, his name is Onyeka Okongwu, would block shots and steal passes. But Jello and Melo did nothing defensively but just play Ole Matador. And Jello went to UCLA last year, and of course he was involved in that scandal in China where they were caught stealing, and he dropped out of school about a month later after that incident. he would not have played any significant minutes for UCLA. He would have played spot minutes off the bench if they needed scoring, a scoring punch, or if somebody got injured and they needed somebody. He was not going to be in the top seven rotation at UCLA. So when you ask me where he would get drafted, he wouldn't have played in the rotation at UCLA. He was an average basketball, slightly above average team this year in the Pac-12. There's no way he's getting drafted.
Wow. Very passionate on your part, and which I like, of course.
Honest.
It's great. Anything else over here? You know, Sean Miller, there's people that are waiting for the shoe to drop, for him to move on or be let go or something. The longer this goes on, the more I think, you know, he's going to be there, but there's a lot behind the scenes. April 12th in Tucson, they're unveiling a Lute Olson statue and having a night of loot down there, which seems to me like a night of healing, you could call it. Bobby Hurley, I think, has done a very good job up here over at Arizona State. Just got to find some bigs, and now he's got three guys to replace that are all seniors that are walking out of here. Do you have a thumbnail on ASU and U of A before you get out of here?
So Sean Miller's digging in his heels. I don't expect him to go anywhere unless he's forced out of there. The problem for me, Brad, is they have six players on their roster that are going to come back next year.
Right.
Maybe. Zero commit. Maybe. There are zero recruits. All of them have decommitted from Arizona. And what kind of year can they have next season? And then if there is no resolution to this FBI investigation, and it's very possible that we won't have any resolution this entire offseason, can we go into next offseason with still that black cloud, with no recruits, with a roster that will be depleted? I'm pretty sure that the roster that Arizona has, regardless of what happens in this offseason, is not going to be anywhere near the roster they've had in the last couple of years. Are they going to be able to, and is Sean Miller going to be able to, you know, create some positive momentum going forward? Or is this just going to be, in the mud? Are they just going to be trudging through the mud? That's what to me is interesting. Probably not very interesting if you're an Arizona fan. going to Bobby Hurley. Quickly comments on Bobby Hurley.
Yeah.
As crazy as he is on the sideline, and that man is crazy, he has done a fantastic job with his 3 years at Arizona State. Now, I mean that. It was a really difficult program to turn around. They have not had a lot of success. He not only generated buzz, but he kept it going. Like, you know, and we know that this season was really uneven, right? Super hot to start and kind of came crashing down. But you cannot deny that Arizona State has momentum and that they are a program that kids, that real prospects are thinking about. Yeah, like, hey, Bobby Hurley's at Arizona State. They are competing. They're beating some of the big boys. This is something that not a lot of coaches, not a lot of high school prospects had been saying before. So kudos to Bobby Hurley and Arizona State.
All right. You've emptied the gas tank here, which I like. And good stuff, as always. Appreciate your time. Thanks, Casey.
Thanks, Brad. Have a good week, man.
You got it. There's Casey Jacobson. When Eric and I had Casey Jacobson with the Suns, I think I felt he was going to be good as a broad. He's gotten really good because of the reps he's at in his fifth season now. Stuff on LiAngelo Ball, that's gold, just breaking it down. Can't play, essentially. There's some NFL stuff going on. I want to get into the Rams. Jim Mora had some interesting comments on Sam Darnold and Gonzaga. Some college basketball I want to get to as well in the next segment. Then Tyler Shuck will be with us, former Hamilton star quarterback, now at the University of Oregon. I'm Brad Sussmat. So on the NFL front, the owners' meetings are going on down in Florida. They've talked about adjusting and going to adjust what is a catch and what is not a catch. And if we sit here and talk about what is a catch and what is not a catch, this is a pen that is out. This is a pen that is in. This is a pen that's out. I can see it's out. This is a pen that's in. I can see it's in. It's going to be the same old nonsense. What is a catch? What is not a catch? If you're sitting there debating what is a catch, what is not a catch for fans and games are stopped and we can all see it over and over and over. So they're going to come out with this is the legislation. In fact, they're talking about it this morning. And I'm just kind of like, guys, you have to prove it on the field. Saying what is a catch and what is not a catch on March 27th does nothing for me. Because this has been a problem within the NFL. Dez Bryant caught the ball. Let's just finish it at that. Unless you're a Cowboy fan, he caught the ball. If you're not a Cowboy fan, he didn't catch the ball. I gotcha. I'm concerned about the Cardinals now from this standpoint of what is going on with the Rams. I'm not one of those that thinks you've got to go out in free agency and sign a whole bunch of guys, because my free agent view is this. Free agency primarily is trying to correct mistakes that you've made in the draft or attrition. You would think that in putting together a roster that you can start to predict ahead, like the Cardinals, for instance, Larry Fitzgerald one day is not going to be here. So we are going to go draft Michael Floyd in the first round, and we are going to go get John Brown, and we're going to get Jerron Brown, and we're going to go down the list of wide receivers. And what do we have as we sit here today coming into this draft? The Cardinals have a need at wide receiver. They've done nothing. Well, I shouldn't say that. They've missed. When you miss on a first-round pick like Michael Floyd, it eventually comes back to haunt you. They're very lucky that Larry Fitzgerald is still really good. But they need a wide receiver in the worst way. Takes me over to the Rams. I don't know if Ndamukong Suh is going to be healthy for a whole season. I know that Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald together on the same defensive front chasing down a quarterback that, I don't know, last time I checked, Sam Bradford's been hurt all the time, is not a good combination. It's not a winning combination. If you're the Cardinals, the idea of what they're doing over in Los Angeles, whether it's Marcus Peters or Aqib Talib or Ndamukong Suh, they're putting together a squad over there on the defensive side of the football. Bill Plaschke, who I respect a great deal, their columnist at the LA Times, called it the Legion of Goon, a play on the Legion of Boom. They're trying reportedly to go get Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham, because the Giants are tired of his off-the-field stuff, Odell Beckham actually lives here in the Valley. Actually lives near me from what I've heard. Not across the street, by the way. Let's just be straight on that. But he's someone that, if you're talking about top wide receivers in the game, and if the price tag for Odell Beckham, Adam Schefter reported, the price tag that he's hearing for Odell Beckham would be like a 1 and a 6 and a 3 the next year. If I'm the Cardinals, let's just run this through the cycle. Financially, you would be putting yourself in a tough spot because Odell Beckham is not happy with his money. The off-the-field stuff in Arizona cannot be as nearly as out of control as it is in New York, where there's always something. If you're the Cardinals, do you have to listen to every last player who comes available? Absolutely you do. If you're Steve Keim, you have to sit and say, Ndamukong Suh, yes or no. Odell Beckham, yes or no. You have to do that. Marcus Peters, yes or no. And so as he's putting together his roster and this stuff about Beckham being made available, should the Cardinals go down that path with a 15th pick overall, they get a wide receiver, they address it, not just a wide receiver, one of the top five wide receivers in the game, instantly puts butts in the seat, sells jerseys, creates buzz, all that stuff. The answer is no. They have more pressing needs from my point of view. But you have to run it through the cycle. The fact the Rams are stocking up this roster and what's going on in San Francisco, where John Lynch, as we predicted, would be aggressive, would go out and make things happen and get things done and not just be doing idle moves, but he's actually cleaned out the roster for the most part, has turned the thing around. Who's had the best off season in the NFC West? Has it been the Arizona Cardinals with the addition of their two quarterbacks? I don't think they're terrible moves, except the financial side of it for Bradford. I think there was an overpayment there. The fact they address immediately, look, we know he's going to get hurt, so we have to go get Mike Glennon. I don't think the Cardinals have had a great offseason. I don't think, if you look at the loss of Tyrann Mathieu, it's not a game breaker. The perception is, why do you let the Honey Badger go? Those of us that watch the team every week and see the numbers all season long know that he couldn't stay healthy for the amount of money. So he leaves. That's life in the NFL. I don't know if David Johnson's going to be 100%. You can put out video and you can talk about how he's going to be out at OTAs all day long. Doesn't mean a darn thing to me. None of the worthless stuff in August means a darn thing to me. All that matters to me is where he is on week 2 in September. That's it. So I'd say their offseason so far has been pretty average. I don't see anything there where you say, wow, I can't believe that this has happened. they've made a very good addition to the offensive line, but they had a subtraction from the offensive line in Jared Valdir. What they're doing over the Rams, it's interesting. Sue has been fined so many times, he's a dirty player. I got a quarterback back here that's just one cheap shot hit away, and what happens? So there's that going on. Jim Mora Jr. was on the NFL Network talking about quarterbacks, and of course, former UCLA coach, got fired, so he's seen Sam Darnold up close. He had some interesting comments. Take a look.
Coach, sitting at number one overall as it stands right now, heading into April 26th down in Arlington, is the Cleveland Browns. If you're making that choice and you're picking a quarterback and you're deciding between Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold, who are you picking?
Oh, nothing like putting me on the spot.
Yeah, no pressure. Yeah,
I'm going to tell you this. Because of fit,
yeah,
I would take Sam Darnold if I were the Cleveland Browns. You know, I think that blue collar, gritty attitude. I think his teammates will love him. I think the city will love him. He'll say the right things. He'll come in and he'll represent well. I think he kind of represents what Cleveland is. And then if I was one of the New York teams, I'd take Josh like that. I think they're both going to be great pros.
That makes sense.
All right. So that's a pretty good little headline. Mora picks Darnold.
If there was one bitter ex Pac-12 coach that would throw his former quarterback under the bus 4 weeks before the NFL draft, it would have to be Jim Mora,
right? Do you think he's throwing him under the bus, though? Who wants to go? Look, some of you are Cleveland Browns fans. I'm sorry, okay? I'm sorry you've had to go through it. I wouldn't want my son to go play for a team that continually gets their heads kicked in.
But he was...
Josh Rosen in New York will kill it.
But he was the quarterback who Mora recruited.
Sure.
I mean, they have a special bond. You've got to back your guy. Don't be mad at your former quarterback that you got fired. Be mad at the school. Be mad at
is
the
AD.
Is
he mad at the school? Or
no,
is he...
but I mean, but it was...
We want these coaches to say what they believe.
It was a pointed shot. I mean, come on.
You thought that was a pointed shot?
And he didn't just say, don't take Josh Rosen, but he said, go ahead and take the USC quarterback, our arch rival school at the time, for the last 100 years.
I'm fine with that.
All right.
I would want my player to go to New York and not Cleveland. That's just me. There's this whole ego thing about who's the number one overall pick. If Josh Rosen is sitting there at home saying, I cannot bleeping believe my own coach would not say me with the number one overall pick, that's too predictable.
I don't think he gives two bleeps what Jim Mora says.
I
but
agree
it makes
with
for
you.
Great talk, it
you.
Makes for great talk show fodder.
If I'm sitting there with the number one overall pick, I've already told you I like Josh Rosen better than Sam Darnold, but that's just me. And
it's a debate that will go on for at least the next few weeks.
Yeah, outside of Carson Palmer, you know, if you talk about USC quarterbacks,
no doubt,
by and large, it's like Notre Dame quarterbacks, by and large.
Outside of Joe Montana.
DeShone Kizer is in Green Bay now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's just certain teams or certain colleges that you look at and say, it's like these nitwits that get all wound up about kids going to community college. I guess it didn't work out for Aaron Rodgers then, right? Dopes. We have Tyler Shuck next, so I'm gonna have to say the Gonzaga stuff. Former Hamilton High star, now at Oregon. He's already working out with the University of Oregon. He's already enrolled in classes. He should be a senior in high school. He made that leap, and I want to talk to him about that leap, and we'll have him Skype on in next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Let's turn our attention to college football now for a couple of minutes. You knew him at Hamilton High School where he tore it up, quarterback Tyler Shuck. He left Hamilton early. No problems with that whatsoever because he wanted to get on the fast track at Oregon for new head football coach Mario Cristobal. And Tyler, back in the Valley for the National Football Foundation Awards Banquet on Saturday night. He's nice enough to Skype on in with us before you head back up to Eugene, Oregon. How has this all worked out for you so far? 3 months ago when we last spoke, you're just leaving Hamilton. You're already on campus at Oregon. You're going through spring ball. You're going through classes. Tell me about the transformation from high school life to college life, Tyler.
You know, it's definitely different, but I feel like I've learned a lot from it. You meet a whole new lot of people. I've been learning a lot as far as the playbook-wise. My teammates, you kind of get into a new culture, new environments. Everything's just kind of getting your feet wet. It's brand new, but I think I've been doing pretty well. Obviously, I finished my first term now, and I'm back home for spring break, so it's good to be home back in the sun. But no, I'm really loving up there, really loving it up there so far.
What can you tell the common high school quarterback and parents about the speed of the game and the difference in the speed of the game from when you were on the field at Hamilton even to last November to where you are now at a Pac-12 program?
Right. You know, I mean, the best game that you'll ever play or the best competition you'll go against in the high school level, it's that and even more. You're always on the spot. You're always competing for a job. Even if you're just eating dinner with your teammates, you're always kind of being evaluated. When you're out there on the field, it's a lot faster. You know, everyone around you is good. You know you're good yourself and you can play with them, but you have to show it every day. You have to compete. You have to prove to your coaches that you're valuable of their scholarship that they gave you. So it's definitely a strenuous process, but, you know, if you love the game of football, if you love competing, it's really not that much of a job. You just get to go out there and do it every day.
When I talk to the quarterbacks at the high school level and even those that have gone on to college and even pro, the ones that left school early in the middle of their senior year, I have yet to run across one that regrets the decision. They'll come back right and go to prom. They will walk with their classmates. Are you in the same boat? Are you missing anything of the high school experience and along those lines?
No, not at all. I'm actually really glad. You know, you come back for break and you kind of talk with people and, you know, they really don't change much and you just get this whole new environment. I mean, I did it to better myself. And, you know, most people, seniors already have senioritis when they leave. And once I had the opportunity to graduate early and go, you know, pursue, I guess, my dream of being at Oregon, you know, it was the best decision I made. You know, obviously there's a lot to go, but, you know, hopefully, I mean, I'm going to go walk with my classmates soon. In May and June. I don't know if I'm going to go to prom yet, but if I have time, but I'm definitely glad I made the decision.
Yeah. You have the date to go to prom with?
No, that's a problem. I don't know if I'm going to really go.
That's a problem.
It's kind of expensive to fly back to, so I don't really know.
Loaded question there. All right. In all seriousness, Coach Cristobal, you had to go through some turmoil. I think it's the only way to put it. A coaching change to the coach you first committed to. Coach Cristobal comes in. There were a few moments, I think, when you and I spoke where you were kind of sort of thinking maybe this wasn't going to happen. It did. How have you found Coach Cristobal to be at Oregon?
You know, he's everything I've wanted and more so far. The entire coaching staff is just stellar. You know, my original offensive coordinator and quarterback coach that I committed to is still there. You know, the wide receiver coach. Most of the people that I enjoyed while I was visiting there are still there besides Coach Haggard, and he left. And I think that's for the better now. I think we're truly better as a team at Oregon. You know, the people who are already there, the teammates that there previously, you know, they really appreciate him because, you know, he was originally the offensive line coach and he just does a stellar job with them, really pushes them to be better. So I think he's going to take that to the whole team now, and we're seeing it already through spring ball.
Tyler Shuck with us, Hamilton quarterback now with the Oregon Ducks. Tell me about Eugene as a city, college life, and how that's adjusted well for you.
It's definitely different from, you know, at least Chandler and Phoenix area. Mm-hmm. But I like it though. Everyone's really nice. It's more of it's definitely a football town. You know, everyone just kind of lives and breathes athletics. You know, I really enjoy it so far. You get that small town feel, but they have big town, like food places and food spots, and it gets a mix. So I really can't complain so far. It's been great.
Before I get you out of here, the other night we ran across each other at the National Football Foundation Awards dinner. That experience, you're up on stage, your black tie. Tell me about that night and what it meant for you and your career.
It was a true honor. You know, just I always saw that previously of my teammates and guys who I look up to go to that event, and it looked super nice. And it was a great venue, and being able to go to that and share it with some of my teammates, Timmy Lockhart and Shay Zucci, it was an incredible evening just to see other, you know, great players in Arizona. And a fantastic event that they set up. And I was really glad that you were there to handle it because you did a great job as well.
Wow.
So it was overall.
Wow. You're sucking up to the host. I mean, come on. That's that's nice.
No, well, it takes a lot.
I'm kidding you, as I like to do with you. It looks as though everything is going well for you. If you do find a date for prom, maybe we'll see you back down here. If not, we'll see you next season. Appreciate the time as always.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Brad.
There's Tyler Shuck with us via Skype. It was good to catch up with the former Hamilton Husky quarterback now at Oregon. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat.